I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about adaptive reuse, finding ways to give vacant or abandoned buildings a new purpose and a fresh lease on life. We'll discuss how this works and why it matters. My guests are Riley Area Development Corporation Executive Director Eric Strickland and former First Lady of Indianapolis Amy Minnick Peterson, who owns the home store Decorate, located on Massachusetts Avenue. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about adaptive reuse of Indianapolis buildings. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Riley Area Development Corporation Executive Director Eric Strickland and Amy Minnick Peterson. You probably heard of her before. She's former First Lady of Indianapolis, spouse of former Mayor Bart Peterson, and is here because she's the owner of the home store Decorate, which is located on Mass Avenue in one of these buildings that we are talking about. So welcome to the program, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. So, Eric, first, so that people understand kind of the context in which we're going to be talking, could you talk to me a little bit about what the Riley Area Development Corporation is?
Sure. So Riley Area Development Corporation is a nonprofit community development corporation. And what that means is it really is a group of volunteers, board members that go out, they look at opportunities, hire staff. And they're specifically looking at neighborhood development. So in your scheme of what's going on in a city, you have a city government, you have neighbors, you have constituents. We kind of fall in between as a nonprofit that's looking to implement neighborhood planning, economic activity, and really making sure that we're inclusive. So there's a lot of things that a city can and cannot do. And we kind of fall in between. So when you hear about the development of affordable housing, or maybe you hear about a community pocket park where neighbors have gone out and fundraised the grants, we're going to talk about the Mass Avenue Merchants Association. Mm-hmm. That was started by our group. And these are groups that can support themselves. They can work in the realm of grants that are through the federal government, through HUD. They can also work with foundations. So they can put together a lot of pieces to help get something to happen. A great example is Mass Avenue and others that are very commonly known are Fountain Square, Irvington, even at 38th and Illinois. There's a lot of development that's being led by these community development corporations.
How do you define the Riley area?
So Riley was originally boundary driven. So mm-hmm. there was a group of neighbors on the northeast side of downtown Indianapolis. And in 1982, they got together and they said, we really want things to change. So they defined it an area basically by their relationships, kind of that northeast side of downtown, which Mass Avenue is the heart of. And as they developed that, and a lot of the things that are there today, the Brickhead sculpture, Dancing Anne, how the cultural trail integrated with the business community, that community development corporation, Riley, had their hands involved in leading and kind of combining those stakeholders. As that area, you know, really settled in and the market became dominant, Riley was able to partner with other community development corporations around the city. So currently we're working in Garfield Park. We're on the west side. And then we're going to talk a little bit today about this adaptive use of buildings, specifically in what's called the North Mass Industrial Corridor.
Amy, what drew you to Mass Ave as a business owner?
Well, I had a business for about 6 years in northern Michigan that was seasonal, And I closed that, and Bart and I moved downtown. So we're just about four blocks away from Mass Ave. And so that became kind of my stomping grounds. And I had still had this crazy interest in retail. They say once you have it, you always have it. And I kind of stalked people for a while down there to see what was going on. And I just happened to find out that there was going to be a building opening up. And it was the right fit. It was the right place for me. And what I had learned over the time of living downtown was just this really amazing community of people who really want to be urban. They want to be downtown. They love what's going on. They're supportive of their neighborhoods. And it was just a great feeling. And I won't say that other neighborhoods don't have that, but I think on the Mass Ave corridor around Chatham Arch, Lockerbie, there's just a different feeling that I've never felt before. And I think most of us who have businesses downtown feel that. We're small businesses, and we really do rely on our neighbors and our downtown supporters to keep us going.
What, and I'm going to ask this because of your background, I mean, you know, for all people forget that it's not just the public official who moves into the public eye, that for 8 years, the entire family at some level is public property, that you know, that's the downside, I suspect, to the experience. The upside is you get to see the city in ways that very few other people do.
That's true.
What was it about downtown that drew you back to live down here and then ultimately, you know, complete the circle and say, well, I'm not only going to live here, I'm going to work here too?
Sure, sure. We lived on the north side during the time Bart was mayor, but I spent enormous amounts of time downtown and actually all over the city learning things that I had no idea were even there. One of the passions that I had that brought me downtown a lot was I helped develop the Immigrant Welcome Center for the city. And so I spent a lot of time in a lot of underserved areas learning more about what the needs were. So it just became one of those things that when we contemplated moving and downsizing, Bart had planned this for quite some time that we would move. I was a little more reluctant because, you know, you get used to your neighborhood and your friends and where I was. But we found this amazing neighborhood, which is really, truly a neighborhood. We happen to be in Lockerbie. Mm-hmm. And I think the passion that I found, I'm not an Indianapolis native, but I've lived here for 34 years. The passion that I've found with people really being downtown is just so unique. I mean, people really walk the sidewalks, they walk their dogs, they shop locally, they support grocery stores when they make changes and don't leave. And it's just a city that has that unique feel to it, and especially downtown. I think that I knew I wasn't going to drive anywhere else, but I wanted to work and live in the neighborhood where I was.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about adaptive reuse of Indianapolis buildings. Really, we're talking about what it takes to revitalize communities and create activity. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, and I'm going to take it back because actually Amy's given us a time marker here when she says she moved here 34 years ago. For those of us who have a fair period of history in this city, we can remember a time when downtown Indianapolis was about the quietest place on earth. Nothing was, particularly after 5 o'clock. I mean, the old joke was that they rolled up the sidewalks at 6 and all of that. And Mass Avenue in particular was just a place you did not want to be in those days. Now, of course, it is one of the cultural economic centers of the city. I'd like to talk a little bit and get both of your thoughts on, first, how that transformation happened and how important it was to the city overall. I'll start with Amy on that one, but then I want to hear Eric's thoughts.
Well, I would agree with you. When I moved here, Bart and I got married in Michigan, and I moved here. And I know we would just come downtown for events and then go home. And there might have been a couple restaurants and things to do, but there wasn't anything that really kept us downtown. I mean, obviously, there were a lot of attractions. But over time, and especially you mentioned the experiences I had, I came to see just an evolving city, and I knew many, many of the efforts that were going on to make this happen. I wasn't as intimately involved as Bart was to see some of these things happen, but I could see the behind-the-scenes commitment of people that really wanted to make these changes. And I didn't spend a lot of time on Mass Ave. I mean, I would go down. I remember years ago, I'm trying to remember a couple restaurants. I actually worked on the east side. I worked for Community Hospital for years. And I'd come down, and it was like a big thing. Like, oh, my gosh, you went downtown. And, you know, and so I saw the evolution. And now fast forward to today, where Mass Ave is the place that you want to be, I can tell you stories of people that I see every day that have come from surrounding communities who make a day or evening of it. They might come knowing there's a great place to eat lunch, and they stay, shop, and then they might stay and go to a show at Old National. I've met a lot of people. I think some of our Indiana campaigns are working well. I feel like we're getting lots of people from the Midwest. But I think Eric, too, can speak to that in-between time when we didn't have this and what was really going on in the neighborhoods in terms of development corps being important to what happened in the areas that, you know, now we would never have expected to see the North Corridor develop the way it is. And I think there's a lot of people that don't probably even know what's going on down there.
Yeah, if someone was in a coma, fell into a coma 35 or 40 years ago and remembered Mass Avenue and just came out today, they would not recognize the zone.
Right. There's a couple of key things that would happen during their coma that you'd want to point out as kind of the milestones or the basically a point where kind of the paradigm shifted. You know, it wasn't the place you questioned why you were there. It was the place you wanted to be. So the first one was basically, you know, defining what Mass Avenue was. And there's a few really key players that are still involved in Mass Avenue. David Enderchek, Wayne Schmidt, also Mark Rushman. You know, and these are the folks who art, music, and architecture. And that's really what has driven a lot of Mass Avenue. By having the Community Development Corporation involved, we were able to organize and purchase a building. And we made kind of that first investment and then got to define really what that was. So it was just before the Peterson administration. Under Goldsmith, we're able to purchase the building where Starbucks and Brewburger is and start to define that we wanted to see retail activity. We wanted to recruit Silver in the City. Kristen Cohn at the time.
Mm-hmm. Has been a guest on this show. Yep. Yeah.
So she opened originally in West Lafayette. I think she opened her store when she was 23, 24 years old. And then we were working with her business model when she was still in her mid-20s. And this was very, very new. But using some additional funding, some of that unique blend of the philanthropy, the resources of the city to make it happen. And then as the Peterson administration came in, something was defined called cultural districts. And this kind of gave the community a broader context. And there's five that we speak of today. And starting to name those areas. So you have to, you know, not only have the place and the leadership, but also the bigger market. And now today, we're going to talk a little bit about the other part of Mass Avenue called North Mass, which is north and east of downtown, and how that plays an integral role in creating a lot of the products and supporting the artists, a lot of what you see on Mass Avenue.
Well, and that development, I mean, one of the things that makes Mass Ave so special is the fact that it doesn't look like just any other street. The character of what it was before has been preserved, which brings us, of course, obviously, to what we're really talking about here. How important was that to the transformation and pulling people in, Eric?
preservation was really key. It was not it did not lead the effort. I think it found its place about midway through the development, where the historic preservation district, which turned 50 years.
Yeah,
this year
we got a show coming up on that and a documentary as well.
Yeah, they really like it. So, you know, not too early, not too late. There's a sweet spot there. But that's what's really driven a lot of good, smart design that keeps Mass Avenue unique, yet new buildings come in.
We are talking about adaptive reuse of Indianapolis buildings. My guests are Riley Area Development Corporation Executive Director Eric Strickland and Amy Minnick-Peterson, one-time First Lady of Indianapolis and now the owner of the Home Store Decorate, which is located on Mass Avenue. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the adaptive reuse of Indianapolis buildings. My guests are Riley Area Development Corporation Executive Director Eric Strickland and Amy Minnick-Peterson, owner of the Home Store Decorate, which is located on Massachusetts Avenue. She's also a former First Lady of Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Ann has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ann, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
It's been great listening to everybody talk about the positives of redevelopment, and I've enjoyed a lot of those things myself going down to Mass Ave and Fountain Square. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the negatives of the people who are displaced from those areas and what might be happening to help that as downtown becomes more expensive and people might be moved out to places where there's less transportation. And unfortunately, how race might play a role in all of this, if that's if that's something you might be willing to talk about.
Well, the show's called No Limits for a reason. We'll talk about it. Thanks very much. Thanks very much for the call, Ann.
Thanks. All right. Thank you.
Sure. That is a concern. And that's always that part of the discussion when we're talking about redevelopment, that the people who've hung in there might get chased out of the place because it becomes nicer than they can afford now. Eric.
Thank you. So, yeah, it is a topic, and it's a topic internally in the nonprofit community development world, you know, how to not gentrify a neighborhood, how to enable those that are in the neighborhood. Now, Mass Avenue was unique. You know, if we go back, we mentioned, like, if you were in a coma. So mm-hmm. if we went back to the very first, part. But we've taken a lot of care along Mass Avenue to make sure that we have one of the largest public housing buildings right in the middle of Mass Avenue in the 500 block. Several of the developments, including our own that involved retail development, included programs to reach out to existing residents and help them, you know, connect with the employers, train, be aware of the job opportunities that were happening in those early stages of development. Now, the Housing Authority, has remodeled and expanded, included retail on their own property. It's more about economic diversity at this point. A lot of Mass Avenue was, relatively underdeveloped. Mm-hmm. If you looked at, say, the north side of Chicago, mm-hmm. A Wrigleyville is a common marker. It was very neighborhoody. We've also made sure that when we're developing, we're taking the interests of the community in mind. And I can remember a time when we were doing a survey along Mass Avenue. This was mm-hmm. just somewhere in the development, and we were standing at the grocery store with a sheet that said, what does the community need? And then mm-hmm. when folks walked out, we'd get that completed form. And it was a hardware store. You know, it wasn't another jazz club or a bar or a beer garden. And that was set off an effort to recruit a hardware store. Also, as a community development corporation, we, You know, we identified the need for a specialty pharmacy. We had a lot of health needs in the community. At one time, we had a large population of residents with AIDS, and realized that we needed to, you know, understand that need and help accommodate, you know, that pharmacy in the community. Communities do evolve over time, and there is displacement. There is pressure, but I think Mass Avenue has a good advantage with affordable housing options that have been there and that are being maintained by organizations.
Well, and job creation has always been a focus for you guys, right? And presumably, I mean, how many of the folks who live in the area actually find work there now, too? Because if transportation is an issue, then being able to walk to work is important.
Correct. So our group maintains about 100 units of affordable housing, and we do make a lot of efforts to make sure that, you know, the job opportunities on Mass Avenue are available for residents. Transportation is a little bit more difficult in Midwestern cities than the East Coast. We've just been developed as a car-focused culture. But I think the efforts like the Red Line, the expanded bus system, will help everybody get better access to job opportunities.
Amy, when you located your business there, I mean, who do you identify as your market? Was it the folks who are living downtown, or do you anticipate that people will find you from elsewhere?
Well, I spent the year before I opened, I was still trying to secure a location, but I spent time with a lot of the business owners and who were extremely helpful in helping me figure out what is really happening there and who and what are the demographics and who are our customers. And so I have to give kudos to the business owners that helped me, because I think that is the one indicator that I had of what Mass Ave would be like to work with in terms of a really collaborative group. And in that, I learned a lot about the real mix of people that had been living there for years in neighborhoods. We always talk a lot about our millennials who are moving downtown, who are different and shop differently and expect different things. And then we have other issues we're contending with, such as the homeless that we are all very well aware of and work with to make sure that we're doing the best possible thing we can when they come into our storefronts and have needs. And so I think realizing that there was that collaborative spirit downtown in terms of knowing that we're not just there sitting there like a mall. Mm-hmm. We're there as a resource. I have to say that the days that I'm there, I'm wearing a Chamber of Commerce hat because people are asking me where to go and what to eat. I'm helping homeless oftentimes get resources and direct them to places. And so when you're in this environment, it is very different from being a storefront and operating on your own. You're very much a part of needing and really wanting to learn what is happening and what kinds of needs there are. And so demographically, we see Tuesday, the difference between a Tuesday and a Friday for me might be lots of out-of-towners and people coming from other parts of the city for lunch compared to the weekends, which can be people coming down for entertainment and are our neighbors who are, you know, in the neighborhood and shopping and doing what they want to do, which is predominantly shop local. Mm-hmm. And so I can see age ranges anywhere from, you know, 18 to, you know, 80. And each day is a little bit different. And that's the beauty of it. I have no idea when I go back to the store today whether there's going to be a busload of people coming because it's holiday time, or whether there are people, you know, just out and about in the avenue when they've finished lunch and are, you know, going from place to place.
And because it's a beautiful day and
yeah,
the
exactly.
leaves have turned and all of that sort
and
of
we
thing.
Our doors open today. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that generates a whole different vibe when our doors open. So,
well, that experience, as Amy points out, Eric, is different. You brought a bag in here. That sort of speaks to that. Can you tell people about the bag?
So I brought one of our shop small bags in here today, mm-hmm. and I wanted to have it here on the table to make sure it entered in the conversation. Yeah. And it represents kind of the convergence of a few movements that are really key to revitalization. First, you know, we're here with a retailer, you know, talking about downtown and the dynamic, and you need to spread that message broader. Mm-hmm. When you look at the power of large retail, of large influencers, a group like Amazon, you know, mm-hmm. and how quickly they can move a consumer to a purchase. Small businesses don't have that advantage. So the Shop Small, the Small Business Saturday is really a good kind of reset and rallying point at a critical time in the year. It's the Saturday after Thanksgiving. Black Friday is a very, very big event. Mm-hmm. Small Business Saturday really stands on its own. And American Express, the SBA, all of the messaging is nationwide. So there are we will start seeing commercials in about 3 to 4 days that'll run during football games, you know, mm-hmm. be present on your Facebook page. That'll be reaching the masses. And it's nice to have that national message. You know, locally, Shop Small is important for Mass Avenue. It's important for the work that we do when mm-hmm. we recruit a startup company or a company that's scaling up like a Natural Born Juicers. Mm-hmm. You know, we want them to have the benefit of the group, you know, working towards a goal. And it's a day, you know, one of a few events on Mass Avenue that's really kind of focused on retail and gets customers to realize how their spending dollars can change economics locally.
Well, and it's a different kind of shopping experience, too. That's Amy was talking earlier about the millennials, but I think in some ways they've begun to shape the larger culture, too, that there is a real divide. People who want some sort of relationship with whatever they bring into their houses.
Yeah, the relationship and the story is very key. And that's, you know, everyone has access to their, you know, to become their own brand now mm-hmm. with how advertising and messaging has shifted. So now, you know, those stories and that authenticity can be directly told. We're not waiting for some group in New York to send us back the ad campaign. Mm-hmm. You know, grab your phone. Make a video of what you're doing. The maker movement also, mm-hmm. you know, now we have local shopping, but I don't want to buy the same things I can buy everywhere. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do it in the same place that I can go. You know, if it's a Chicago or a Cleveland or a Cincinnati, I want to feel like I'm in a community. So that experience, you know, comes down to the product. And, you know, really one of the things we realized in this community development phase is, you know, talked about mm-hmm. gentrification. If you can grow more economically, including the development of local goods mm-hmm. that a store owner wants to sell, that's really critical to their business model mm-hmm. on a street that wants authentic local business owners, you really have an economic loop, mm-hmm. you know, that you can plug into and see the results. So Indianapolis, you know, in the Midwest, these were settled by minds and bodies, people mm-hmm. that made ideas. You know, there's a reason we have the top engineering school in the country here, Purdue. It's mm-hmm. because, you know, the industry, the network needed that education to be here. And Indianapolis was a very strong manufacturing town. And even though it still is, we still see a lot of gaps. And that's where a makerspace, an industrial corridor, and what is being made needs to connect with the market, with the mass avenues that are out there.
We are talking about the adaptive reuse of Indianapolis buildings, really talking about community revitalization here on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what Doug has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881.
Sure.
Doug, you're on the air.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
I'm just old enough to, when I first moved to Indianapolis, I used to try to find my way around Indianapolis, and the downtown was so desolate back then, and this was in the mid-70s, that I could park. Marston Street was had lanes going both directions, had a median in the middle, and I'd park my car along that median and just get out and walk around, look at the buildings. Nobody ever bothered my car or anything sitting there. I'd leave it there sometimes half hour, an hour at a time. usually on a Sunday. But that all changed with the Reagan tax plan in the 80s, and when that started apartment renovation and everything, really changed things around. And I guess it's amazing to me when I go downtown now and look at all the changes that have happened since then. Mm-hmm. Not just downtown, but in some of the surrounding neighborhoods, Lockerbie being, of course, the first, and Fountain Square being the most recent. But my question is, I know there may be one example of this, but with all the people moving downtown, it seems to me that a good adaptive reuse of some of the bigger buildings would be for some either indoor hydroponic vegetable farming or some indoor fish farming. Is anybody considering that?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Doug. We'll see if we can get you an answer. Thanks.
All right.
Eric?
So I'm not an expert on the overall downtown mm-hmm. market, but being a resident and from my vantage point on Mass Avenue, there is a shift on how office space is being used, how downtowns are interacting economically. You know, you can see that the just representing that the name on the building. The tallest building used to be a bank. It always was a bank. Now it's an IT company. So buildings are being looked at much differently. Where we're seeing movements in the urban farming and kind of the hydroponics is in our former industrial space that was near downtown along our rail lines. Mm-hmm. And on the Near East Side, there is a group that's scaling up that indoor farming. Some of the microgreens that you're eating in the restaurants on Mass Avenue are coming from those farms. Getting that type of product out every week on a plate, you know, is a challenge, and that type of food production is starting to gain some momentum. But we don't see it quite yet in the structures that are in, you know, what we call the Central Business District. I think you're seeing those reused right now for hotel, you know, more supporting the convention business. But change is always happening.
Gotten an email from a listener. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Listener writes, I can't speak to Fountain Square, but it strikes me that the retail on Mass Ave is strongly focused on bars and clubs. I tried to shop there last holiday season and found almost no retail stores, half a dozen or so at most, and the toy store has already split. For what it's worth, Broad Ripple is pretty much the same. I guess what I would ask, and Amy, I'll let you speak to this. It strikes me, and I can't claim that I know Mass Avenue super, super well, but I do have spent a fair amount of time there. Also depends upon what part of Mass Ave we're talking about, too, where you are on it. It's a fairly long stretch.
I think that is the beauty and also the challenge. It's a very long street, and depending on where you start and stop, you may miss some of the great things that exist. The 300 block, I always get this right, I have to ask Eric. The 300 block is ripe with lots of things. You know, it has everything from a Starbucks to Silver in the City to a children's store to a restaurant, a couple restaurants. And I'm actually on the 700 block, but in order to get to my street, and if you're walking, you now have to go through some construction, which is a development that took over the former credit union building, Firefighters Credit Union. But when I tell people, I talk about the beauty of the street, which is if you're up for a walk and you park and you get out, you're going to see a lot of different things. We certainly have our share of bars and restaurants, and we're very cognizant of that. But many of us know we're working with others to try and bring in other things. There's a huge development that's going to be starting soon in the Coca-Cola plant, which will completely change the end of Mass Ave, which is the north side that Eric's talking about.
And that gets to a point I think we're going to talk about in the, you know, in the next segment after we come back from the break, is the development of that whole area, North Mass, but also the difference in expectations when you shop small. I mean, most of us don't go to the mall and think, oh, by the way, I'll have a meal while I'm doing this or whatever. I'll have a dining experience. We're talking about the adaptive reuse of Indianapolis buildings. My guests are Riley Area Development Corporation Executive Director Eric Strickland and Amy Minnick-Peterson, former First Lady of Indianapolis and owner of the Home Store Decorate, which is located on Mass Ave. you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook or on Twitter. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today on No Limits about the adaptive reuse of Indianapolis buildings, really talking about how you revitalize communities, what the challenges are, what the opportunities are, what the costs and what the benefits are. My guests are Riley Area Development Corporation Executive Director Eric Strickland and Amy Minnick-Peterson, former First Lady of Indianapolis and the owner of the home store Decorate, which is located on Mass Ave. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Mac has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Mac, you're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I'd like to make a comment, and it's in the pending tax legislation, tax reform legislation bill that's come out. The Historic Preservation Tax Credit, which has been around, I think, since the late 70s, maybe the early 80s, it's really been a bipartisan issue in the past, is slated to be canceled altogether. And you just mentioned the Coca-Cola bottling plant. I'm guessing that, the development of a project like that is totally dependent on the developer getting the 20% tax credits from a project like that. So adaptive reuse is certainly a big part of the old industrial building stocks of cities like Indy. We could not do projects like this without preserving them historically, which I think is an important thing as well, but also being able to qualify for those tax credits. So my comment would be that's at least one thing to reach out to your local legislators and say that you'd like to see that removed from that legislation as it's written.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment. Eric, that one, I mean, it's got to be a source of concern because in a lot of ways that tax credit did level the playing field, so it would make sense then to hold on to these historic buildings rather than just knock them down and start over or move further out away from the center city.
It does. And we mentioned, you mentioned a 20% tax credit on what's called qualifying historic preservation.
Mm-hmm.
So that tool has been used along Mass Avenue. It's part of there is a historic district that supports mm-hmm. the use of that, helps define it, helps make it a little easier to get that tax credit. And it is concerning. I know that, you know, the very minute the Senate committee wrote down the rules, all of our phones lit up, you mm-hmm. know, everyone in the industry who works around that. So these are woven together. When you talk about the vibrancy and the uniqueness of an area, it starts with preservation. Preservation is functionally more expensive than building new. It just is. To pay for the place, to have small business that can function, that can afford the rent in the building, a lot of things have to line up. A caller also earlier talked about diversity. Mm-hmm. Parts of the projects along Mass Avenue use the tax-exempt bonds, either at the 4 or what's called 9% level, to fund the affordable housing units that, you know, we discussed there. And that's also, you know, woven into the workforce, you know, who's working mm-hmm. on Mass Avenue, who's living on Mass Avenue. Amy mentioned seeing someone out walking a dog. Who is my neighbor? Why is there diversity? And a lot of the economic tools that Indianapolis had available to it were really used on Mass Avenue during the development period and used as good examples.
Would it have been cheaper, Amy, for you to set up your business? There is a line. This line of questioning is taking us somewhere. Would it have been cheaper for you to set up your business someplace other than a historic district? I mean, you know, I'm assuming that when you're talking about decoration and all of that, you know, the location probably does matter, but you do see some of these shops in traditional malls and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. There are costs associated that I wasn't fully aware of, which really come down to the historic preservation aspect of that. And I think that's the beauty of it for me, was knowing that the building was there. There were some stipulations with where I am, because I happen to be in a condo building, and so it can never become a bar or restaurant by nature of being below condos. But there were costs. I had to, you know, the zoning and things that you have to do, and signage that were probably a little bit more costly because of having to adhere to certain specs that I probably wouldn't have had in other places, or it might have been different, or maybe taken care of by the mall or someone else who is really trying to encourage you to come in. So, but in the end, I think that I looked at all those things and realized that I wanted to be a part of a vibrant community, and wanted to be a part of an area where collaboration was really, it's very important overall. I mean, I can't say we're all one big happy family because we're this big, huge, spread out street. But there are other places that I've been, like New Orleans and other areas, where there's a street called Magazine Street that goes on and on and on. There's residential, there's shopping, there's bars, there's restaurants. And I think all of that completely lends itself to continual change and adapting, like we all will be doing with our young community now, our millennials, who we started talking about, but who have special interests and shop differently. Compare that to those who have been downtown, who have certain places to go and certain ways they want to do things. And I think that's the beauty of what we're doing on Mass Ave.
Well, and I guess where that question was one to set up, would it have been possible, would this kind of revitalization have been possible if, as you know, we tend to forget in this day when people will talk about the government being, you know, something foreign to us rather than people we send to represent us so that we can govern ourselves. If we hadn't said through that process, oh, holding on to what came before us is going to be important to us, we're going to place a value on that, and that means we're going to say, you know, we're going to level the playing field and say through these tax credits and other incentives that we really want, if possible, for people to hold on to these old buildings that help establish the character of our community. If we hadn't done that, what would Mass Avenue look like right now, Eric?
You know, I think it would look much different. And we can pick another street where something isn't happening in the community. And I don't want to pick on any place. But that's what happens. You don't have the context or the conversation around place without investment. You don't have investment without community. You know, Amy, as she just described, made a choice, knowing that it was harder, knowing that it would be more expensive, you know, to walk past other easier options, you know, to invest in Mass Avenue. That's really what you want to get to. And that helps, you know, that helps maintain the buildings, helps when development happens, you know, keep things pointed in that direction. I can say this. People like place. No one would travel to Europe if they didn't have any historical sites. It'd just be another, I don't know, place without buildings. Yeah. You know, they really want to go to unique experiences. And it's much more resilient if your retail, your restaurants, your theaters are in that place that people want to go to. That place also has a tendency to have a tighter community bond, which offsets things like security and understanding what's happening, inclusiveness, that gets a higher level of discussion. So it's very important to have preservation as your foundation.
So what's the future of that area? I mean, the Mac made reference to the Coca-Cola
right
plant that is obviously there's a lot of work being done there.
it's a very, very big project, and it represents a lot of what was happening in Indianapolis around manufacturing, along product development. At one time, it was the largest Coca-Cola plant in the world. You know, as Coca-Cola was, I mean, they were making iPhones in their day. Everybody wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the community was excited about it. So you can see its heritage investment, the quality of the building. It's going to propel Mass Avenue further. There is not another Coca-Cola white terracotta bottling plant, maybe in the U.S., that's going to be developed in a cultural district. So I think it gives Mass Avenue a lot more definition. We're excited that, you know, a group like West Elm, a retailer, is carrying the flag. Sometimes it's maybe just a restaurant or something else. So kind of this balance of shopping and dining, you know, gets to come more into play. And also, it's going to be very entrepreneurial. It's, while it's a big development, it's being developed by an entrepreneurial group, the Hendricks Group out of out of Wisconsin. And they do very special projects. They did not look at this as a return on investment. So I think they were attracted to the story here in Indianapolis.
We made reference to the fact that communities are living things. I mean, they have to change and adapt, and that, you know, what might have been necessary 10, 15 years ago isn't as necessary now, but there are new needs that pop up. For that area, what is the crying need right now? I'm going to start with Eric because you're going to speak from one perspective, but Amy is a business person. I'd like to hear her thoughts in the area, and a resident, I guess, as well.
So, yeah, so for Mass Avenue, what we really see is building the getting the business community more aware of the past development. So it's constantly, you know, ebbing and flowing, but why something is happening, what's happening with major shifts in retail, why we're all participating in Small Business Saturday, why the relationship of the consumer, talked about too many bars and restaurants. You know, we're in a capital economy. There's not too many bars. That's what people want. There wouldn't be a lot. So balancing all of the needs and keeping that conversation going, you know, outside of that initial development, you know, after the buildings are built, how do we maintain?
Amy.
Well, we have, I think as a business group, our Mass Ave Association, we talk about a number of things on the avenue that directly affect us. I mean, we're cognizant that we want a mix of things, and I think most of us are not afraid of change. You know, there's been suggestions of what will happen when there's major things happening on other end. But as far as I'm concerned, it's the more the merrier. It's all great for all of us who choose to live downtown, and for those who choose to want to come downtown. And to the person who says, you know, there isn't a lot of shopping down there, I mean, there are places off the beaten path. It's not just all on Mass Ave. It's surrounding Mass Ave. So you kind of have to, and we all need to do a better job of this. We all talk about marketing and communications and letting people know where we are and what's going on. So communication and keeping people coming down and visiting is important to us. I mean, we're also very cognizant of parking, which is one of the issues we talk about a lot, because it is tough to park, especially when it really gets busy on a Friday and Saturday night. So as much as we're not all gung-ho about big parking structures, that will ultimately become part of what we need to get people more comfortable, that they're not driving around at peak times. So those are all things important to us. But I think all of us really want the diversity of businesses, and we want to keep changing as we need to, because certainly the retail world is going to change dramatically. So there's a number of things that we consistently look at.
Richard, you're on the air.
I frequently go on Massachusetts Avenue, and unfortunately, the green space on Massachusetts Avenue seems to be disappearing. There was a real nice grove of trees at the intersection of, I guess that's Michigan, Alabama, and Mass, which were cut down when those new apartment buildings were built. The people in that home, low-income housing home or whatever it is, the Luger Towers, you'd see them sitting out on benches during the day, well, in the shade. Well, that's all gone now, and the city's in the process of planting trees to limit stormwater, well, there was a nice grove of trees that limited stormwater, and now it's gone. I would hope that with the development of the coke plant that there would be some land set aside there for as green space.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Richard. Yeah, have there been lessons learned along the way, Eric, about
it? It is constantly evolving. There's two tales. There was a very nice grove of trees right outside of the Barton Tower, mm-hmm. which was across the street from the Murat, a theater. And it was a very difficult decision as that development was proposed. A couple of things, Mass Avenue wanted to be that continuous street. And that 500 block, for the experience was missing. Ultimately, what had happened on the property there is that allows, the housing authority to remodel their homes there. So there was some good offset from the bad. I think you can never say it's good to cut down a tree. It's no one says that. But looking at the greater context of how it supported the affordable housing and more economic inclusiveness, and more economic opportunity, it's a changing community.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Sean. He writes, I'm a member of the Indy Siberia Makerspace. Will you please talk about what makerspaces are? We share a warehouse on the east side that lost so many large businesses over the last 30 years. We have 3D printers and classes on how to use them, ham radio club, virtual reality, and so many different kinds of high-tech equipment for everyone. Eric, we're getting close on time, so I'm going to throw that one to you. Talk about what makerspaces are.
So we talked about the changing environment in Mass Avenue and welcoming more entrepreneurs. The makerspace and the maker movement is where these ideas can start. And the Ruckus makerspace, just a little bit up outside of the traditional Mass Avenue, works similar to Club Siberia. So makerspaces let you come in and work with your product idea at very low cost. They share a lot of tools. They share a lot of opportunities. And we think that the industrial corridor along the other sections of Mass Avenue can start to connect with the commercial and the retail corridor as those products get made.
Got about 45 seconds left. Amy, how big is Small Business Saturday for your business?
It's a really big day for all of us. I think we love it because there's all the associated publicity that goes on, thanks to American Express. But it allows us to actually spend time with customers who really are coming there and they want to have conversations with the owners. We enjoy it for that reason. I think it's just a special event that allows us to really connect. So you're going to find our avenue full of activity, full of involvement. Check our websites and all of our opportunities to see what we're doing. I could give you a huge list of those right now. We're running out of time, but everyone is going to be participating.
You can put them on
way.
Our Facebook page. People
Great.
Go and follow that if you would.
Perfect.
And the other thing is, I'm assuming you're praying for a nice sunny day.
Yes. A little snow would be okay, but no rain.
I'd like to thank my guest, Eric Strickland and Amy Minnick-Peterson, and all of our listeners for some great questions. We will be back on Tuesday when we're going to be talking with New Yorker writer Jane Mayer. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.